Okay, so we want to talk about Poynting's theorem. That's what we were just about to start at the end of last lecture. Rather than doing theory right at the beginning, let me do an example. And in the example, we will calculate power transported, power delivered, using a few equations or relationships that are part of Poynting's theorem. But you don't need to see the theorem before seeing the example. And then after the example is over, we'll go and see the theory. Because it all is common sense, and theory doesn't do too much. You can see the things that you're computing are making sense from get-go. Okay, so let's consider the following situation. So this is an example. Here's a right-handed coordinate system, x cross y into z. Somebody came and asked me a question yesterday saying, hey, this is not working out because if I draw this in a different way, I'm getting the wrong sign. And well, he was drawing the whole situation in a different way, which is permitted. You know, you can take this and rotate it. It doesn't have to look like this. But he was doing one more crucial mistake. What was he doing? He was not making x, y, and z to be directed in such that it's a right-handed point. You always have to have x cross y into z, okay? So if you don't do that, he was effectively working in a left-handed system and he was getting a minus sign. So avoid that. Make sure that you are using a right-handed system. Okay, so we have this right-handed system, and I'm going to imagine that at x equals 2 surface, there is an x equals 2 surface, there is a sort of a current density. There is a cosinusoidal time-varying current, okay? It is located on this surface, so I'm going to draw an arrow here, but it applies to the entire x equals to 2 surface. I have a surface current J sub s, and it is pointing in z direction, so it's a vector, pointing in z direction. It has a certain magnitude, let's say it's 2, and then cosine of 2 pi, let's say, t. Okay? And 2 pi is then a radian frequency. This is a time-varying current, and this is in amperes per meter. What I want to do is figure out how this thing radiates fields, E and H fields for both sides, using more or less what we've seen last lecture, and then go ahead and calculate E cross H, which is the Poynting vector that has an interpretation as power transported per unit area, and also J dot E, which has an interpretation of the absorbed power in the region. If it's a volumetric current, it is that J dot E will give you the absorbed power per unit volume. If it's a surface current, it will give a absorbed power per unit area rather than per unit volume. Okay? But the absorbed power, if it is negative, implies the existence of a delivery rather than absorption. Okay, so we're going to do all that. Any questions? So those are our objectives. Now, is Lee here? Lee is not here. Okay, Lee taught us something useful. Perhaps we do remember that J and the corresponding E that is produced are pointing in opposite directions. Okay, what else did we learn? Surface current is the instigator, and you get the H and E, okay? And you get the H simply by getting J and dividing it by 2, because there are equal and opposite effects that are coming on either side, and that J is a jump in H. And that's it. Divide half the J, that becomes H, and also reorient it so that you are abiding with the right-hand rule. When you stick your thumb in the direction of the current, then your fingers are telling you which direction to add up to H. Okay? But then, from that H, you can use right-hand rule to get to the E. By the time you get to the E, we got what we observe from Lee, or what we... It's the opposite direction to J. It has an eta in front of it, and still a division by 2. Okay? Eta is because as you go from H to E, you multiply H with eta. That's where the eta is coming. And if you think about it, having an eta there, translating current to an electric field, makes sense. Because, let's write that relationship. So E is going to be minus J, okay, and eta, and divided by 2. So this is the relationship, okay? And this is in amperes per meter, okay? So to have this volt in meter, what do you need to multiply with amperes per meter with? Say, ohms. Okay, so even if you forget that there was an eta needed here, you can get back to it through dimensional analysis. You know that linearity demands that J is going to be governing how big E is, but E cannot be simply J. There has to be a sort of a conversion factor. That conversion factor has to have units of ohms, and it is the eta in this context. And division by 2 is coming about because of the H is going through that division of by 2 symmetry. Any questions? So, of course, you can write all this into your cheat sheet, but you can also remember it through these types of links and relationships. Okay? Then you don't need to search in your cheat sheet. Any questions here? Of course, this is also not complete. First of all, this is a J sub s. And second, J sub s is only a function of time, but that E is a function of time and space. So somehow, that has to be given in this problem. And how do we do that? We interpret T as a delayed T, and we put T minus or plus distance divided by C to get a D'Alembert form that's going to serve us. Okay? Given all that, so this is the sort of like the general formula. I'm going to erase this. I'm going to directly go from this into the corresponding electric field along these lines. All right. So here, I write my electric field. Okay? So I'm going to divide this by 2 and multiply it by eta. So 2 goes away, but eta is 125. Also, z hat is going to be negated into minus z hat. Minus z hat times 125. What else? All right, so cosine 2 pi, this t is going to be changed, okay? What do I change it? I change it with a delayed time. And for the delayed time, what do I look at? The distance away from the surface in either direction, okay? So our surface is at x equals to 2, okay? So let me measure away from this particular surface distances in this direction as x prime rather than x, okay? So I'm going to then write this as t minus x prime divided for c for all those positions x that are greater than 2. And I also remind myself here that x prime is x minus 2. Okay? If we are at x equals, let's say, 2.5, that corresponds to x prime of 0.5, and the difference is just this is just a transformation that makes sense. Any questions? All right, so, and what about for waves that are propagating in the other direction? Well, they're going to be the same, except that we have to go along with this. Am I done for the electric field? I think I'm done, except for the units. This whole thing is in volts per meter. And this whole thing was in amperes. So don't forget your units in the exam, okay? Even if it's sort of ambiguous, like last time there was an epsilon which made it difficult, at least put an attempt. Say, hey, this epsilon is a number and the units in MKS is this. I want to see the units. Otherwise, you're going to be losing some points. Okay, so then the electric field is an arrow, if you wish, that can be drawn on this surface as well as everywhere else. And on that surface, these two results agree. There is no jump in the electric field. Right at this surface, where there is a surface current density, there is a unique electric field that is not jumping. That's not the same with H. H is going through crisis as it is going through that surface. It's pointing in one direction on one side, and it's another direction on the other side, and it's going through a sort of a signal function like a step there. All right. You have a question?
Yeah. So for x less than 2, are we just using x, or are we still just using x?
I'm going to make soon the substitution here, and then I will be covering both sides. Okay. Once I make that substitution, this result is valid on both sides, x greater than 2 and x less than 2.
We don't know whether it's minus or positive.
No, we do. The minus 1 goes with x greater than 2, and the plus 1 goes with x. Basically, Brian, basically you need to match your equation with propagation. Look at it. Look at the blackboard. In this direction on this side, and propagation in this direction on that side. I'm just about to get to work out h now, okay? And for that purpose, I am going to use my right-hand rule, okay? With the electric field going in this direction, and I can see that my magnetic field on this side, on the 2 plus side, Brian, has to be pointing in y direction, right? So that I go in this direction. Now, to go in the opposite direction on the other side, I need to have my E in this direction, H in this direction, so E cross H has my thumb pointing in that direction. So based on all that, I should be also be able to write here. Y hat, it looks like it's plus and minus. I think we all agree, it's shaking our heads. And then you don't need the 120 pi. It's basically this 2 gets divided by 2, and you don't need to supply any 120 pi. Then otherwise, the same thing. X prime over C, but you can interpret X prime once again as X minus 2. So we have the sort of like the full details of the fields written down. I am reaching a cosinusoidal result because I have started with a cosinusoidal current. My cosinusoidal current at that x equals 0 plane is radiating these waves which are rippling out in both directions. Any questions here? So let me now take one of these expressions here and write it in a little bit more expanded form, okay? Usually what people would do is to expand the interior as follows. First of all, we have 2 pi t. And then we have either minus or plus 2 pi divided by c times x prime. But x prime is x minus 2, so you would also break that into a part. And you would put x here. And then the last term that is coming in would be, because there is a minus sign in front of that, it would swap around this order here and places plus or minus 2 pi over c times 4 pi over c. This is how people would typically write this. Cosine omega t plus or minus beta x plus or minus a phase shift, or simply plus a phase shift that can be positive or negative. Okay? As such, the argument of the cosine function, which shows up in calculations of cosinusoidal wave fields, is referred to as phase. This whole thing is phase. Okay? Then people observe that phase is linearly proportional to omega in time, and also the phase is linearly proportional to x in space with a proportionality constant plus or minus beta. This is our beta. Okay? So ultimately this is cosine omega t plus or minus beta x plus a phase shift. This is the phase shift. Any questions? You know, somebody who came to my office yesterday asking questions says, hey, all these E and H calculations, we see the same phase. Is that student here? There he is. What's your name? Okay. That's exactly what you said, right? That was a good observation, a good question, and using the right language. Okay, you guys have learned about phases and seen them in ECE 210. In linear systems, when you have sine and cosine inputs, what does the system do to those sine and cosine inputs? What is the most general response? It takes and changes the amplitude. In other words, it has a multiplicative amplitude change, and it has what kind of a phase change? An additive phase change. It places a phase shift inside the argument. Okay? But of course, in ECE 210, the phases were only time dependent. There were no x or z. Okay? It was cosine or sine omega t when it came out from the system became sine or cosine omega t plus a phase shift. And that phase shift was part of the frequency response function, because the frequency response function was itself an amplitude and phase. It was a complex number, all right? So the same thing is going to be happening in all this stuff too. And you can certainly look at the E to H or H to E transformation as a linear system sort of a thing, okay? Except that in this case, the frequency response function is the simplest it can be. It's a constant. It is either eta or 1 over eta, depending which direction you go. And it's not a function of omega, because we are still dealing with simple systems, in the sense that we are dealing with source-free medium, no conductivity, nothing, okay? So eta is just a number. But when we put some of these complexities back into the picture, eta is going to be a frequency response, okay? It's going to have a magnitude and a phase. And when it has a phase, there is going to be a phase difference between E and H, which is going to come in exam number 3. But in exam number 2, there is no phase difference. E and H are all going to be in phase. So thank you. That was a good question. That was a good question. And yes, everything that you are doing, everything that we did in the last lecture, everything we are doing this lecture, and everything you are doing in your homework, E and H have, you know, the same phase. They have the same dependence. It's just that their direction and amplitudes are changed, but there is no other change. Any questions here? All right, so that is a little bit of a terminology. Frequency, wave number, phase shift. And then one more thing, okay? This thing has a phasor. Cosine omega t plus some phase shift in EC e to 10 had a phasor. What was the phasor? E to the j phase shift, okay? In this case, we actually have, in addition to the linear time dependence, not only a phase shift, but another phase offset that is dependent on position x, okay? So within the context of ECE210, you would say the entire phase shift actually is a function of x, all right? So what is the phasor, Brian? Let's just apply the E to the, just let's, let us apply the rule of going to a phasor in ECE210. What was the rule? First of all, the phasors are paired up with sine and cosine functions, okay? And the rule is this, I'll remind you. Find a complex quantity that when you multiply with e to the j omega t and take the real part, gives you the cosine function that you are studying. Brian, you're a smart guy. Let's apply this rule. What complex quantity, when we multiply to e to the j omega t and the take real part, will become this? I know you can do it. Just don't be shy.
That's
huh? Beta is there, of course. A few other things. Come on. Let us just use Euler's identity, okay? This, certainly this whole animal is the real part of e to the j omega t minus or plus beta x plus phi. Certainly this is true, okay? And certainly I can break apart the e to the j omega t part as a multiplier and get to this portion of the blackboard. The phasor of that thing, so let me write it for completeness here. Omega t plus minus or plus beta x and plus or minus, what was it? 4 pi over c. The phasor counterpart of it, e to the minus or plus j beta x, okay? And if you wish, you keep multiplying in this fashion, plus minus j 4 pi over c. This is the phasor. Okay, so we are going to be associating with all cosinusoidal E fields and H fields corresponding phasors. Cosinusoidal E and H fields are real quantities. The phasors are complex quantities, just like phasors, voltage phasors and current phasors in ECE210 were complex quantities. So we are going to start using that notation. Okay, and I'm going to come back to the fact that we can use phasors a little bit down the line. Right now I want to talk something different. What I want to calculate next is the pointing vector. Okay, so since we have both E and H here, we can calculate E cross H. We can do that on both sides. Okay, for the greater than 2 side and less than 2 side. Okay, so greater than 2 side, I have pictorially, I can see that my E cross H is going to point in plus x direction. Okay? So when I go to these equations and select the appropriate ones for x greater than 0, I'm going to get, let me erase this portion. This is not so important at this point. let's just calculate E cross H. So E cross H, this ends up having a magnitude that's the amount of power that is transferred per unit area. And it is given a name, so it is S. And that is for the particular example that we are working out. When I cross this guy into this guy, they are orthogonal. Therefore, they create yet the third orthogonal direction. In this case, that orthogonal direction is x hat for x greater than 2. So I have x hat. Otherwise, what do I have? 120 is multiplying 1, and I have the same cosine multiplying itself, so I have a cosine square. It looks like I have 120 pi cosine square of all that stuff, and I'm not going to repeat that. And that's a vector. Did I miss anything? No, that's it. And what is the units for that? Well, the units are obviously volts per meter multiplying amperes per meter. That is volt ampere per meter square, or watts per meter square. So this is in watts per meter square. So even if you have not seen Poynting's theorem proving to you that E cross H is transported energy per unit time per unit area, you can reach that conclusion just through the common sense interpretation of the dimensionality of this thing. That's it. It is a vector. That vector is pointing in the direction energy is being transported, which is in the x direction, on this side of the R radiator. R radiator is sitting at x equals 2 and radiating in both to its right and left energy. And this is the relevant stuff that's happening in this side. Any questions? Yeah. It is plus, because my E is pointing in this direction, my H is pointing in this direction. When I go E cross H, I pick this direction, all right? So if you try it here with Z cross Y, but then there is a minus and plus that you have to take into account, it is not, it's really minus Z cross Y, that is the same as Y cross Z, and that gives you the X direction, all right?
Why don't we look at on the right side? Why don't we look
right? Right now I'm looking on the right side because you have asked this, and now I'm going to go to the left side. Now let's complete the left side, okay? In the left side, my friend John, I go like this, and I get the same expression, that, but it's going the other direction, okay? So if it's going in the other direction, then I have plus or minus, okay? But I have to be careful, John. The detail that I didn't show inside that bracket, it will be also different in the both sides, right? One of them is going to have the minus signs.
Oh, yes.
The other is going to have plus signs. So let me just then, as a reminder, put that there, okay? I'm not writing the full thing, but we have these expressions. Any questions now? So now we have this Poynting vector. Poynting vector is a vector. We interpret its direction as the direction in which energy is being transported. We interpret its magnitude as the power per unit area. But there is this cosine square variation, which depends on time and space. So this thing is carrying energy, but you know, depending on where you are and when you are, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. The fields are themselves cosinusoidal, therefore the associated power is also cosinusoidal. But whereas the fields are flipping sign, they become positive and negative, this quantity is not going positive and negative, because cosine square is always non-negative. Therefore, the power, instantaneous power, is an oscillating animal. And as we know from ECE 210, when we have oscillating power, instantaneous powers, we say it's fine. We appreciate that you're oscillating, but we are interested in something more sort of representative. We go for the average value, right? We have average power in AC situation. So how do we get the average value? We take the power that is oscillating in time, integrated over one period, divided by the period, and that gives us the average value, okay? So basically something like cosine square is gonna do this, and then you integrate over one period and divide it by that, you get the mean value. What is that mean value? What is the time average of cosine square? 1/2, all right? So now, so what I'm gonna write is the following, yes. If I take the time average of the Poynting vector, which is the time average of E cross H. For time average, I'm using these brackets, angular brackets, okay? Then I go to here, and I see minus or plus X hat, and then I see 120 pi. Then I say there is a cosine square term over which I'm gonna do this time averaging. But that time averaging is going to give me the 1/2 factor. So there is a 1/2 coming from here. So the answer is plus or minus x hat 65 and watts per meter squared. Now, I say on the right and left side of this antenna, I have an average power that is being transported to the right and to the left of 60 watts per meter squared. That's what I quote. Of course, this power is coming and going away from somewhere. Where is it coming from? It is coming from that current sheet. So that current sheet should be the provider of this thing. And that we can calculate to that. I'm going to get quickly. Now, where does this 1/2 factor come from? Well, there are various ways of thinking about it. A cosine function, although it reaches a magnitude of 1 and minus 1 at its peak, it also wastes time crossing the zero. So not all the time it is providing all the power it can be providing. You know, if it stayed at a constant amplitude of unity, it would be giving an average value of 1 power, but it's wasting time and therefore only 1/2 time. Another way of looking at it is cosine square of any argument is equal to 1/2 1 plus cosine 2a. Okay? And if you take this average of this over one cycle of a, the cosine 2a term doesn't contribute. It is this term that remains. Okay, so this average value is giving you 1/2 factor, and that's what we... So in some of the students coming to my office hours yesterday asking about the last problem, and says we are confused how to take the average power. I think this is one way of doing it. And the other way is using phasors, which I'm going to come in a few minutes anyways. All right? You either do it this way, or you work with the corresponding phasors and utilize the equivalent of the formula for average power for EC to 10, which went as 1/2 the real part of VI conjugate. Okay? Every cosinusoidal voltage is a phasor voltage, capital V. Every current has a capital I phasor, and if an element is supporting a voltage of cosinusoidal voltage of V with phasor capital V, while it is conducting a current I of T with a phasor I, then the average power that is being consumed there is 1/2 the real part of VI conjugate. Okay? So anytime you have power calculation, whether it is in circuits or in EM, it's always the same thing. Find the phasors. And 1/2 go 1/2 the real part of the conjugated product of the phasors that you need. Okay? That conjugated product for J dot E calculation would be 1/2 the real part of J phasor dotted into E phasor star. That's what it would be. But let's not go there and simply calculate our J dot E now. So this was pointing vector. So now I'm going to do J dot E. Poynting is the name of a professor from Scotland. Henry Poynting or something like that, who first came up with the theory after Maxwell came with his equation. And the next thing, J dot E has a name too. It's called Joule heating. Joule heating. And Joule is the guy who did all the thermodynamic measurements. You know, he's the guy who in his honeymoon left his wife behind and he was making waterfall measurements. You know the story, I assume. Very dedicated guy. Well, that's why we use joules, right? I mean, in our energy measures. So J dot E, let's look at J dot E. In this case, of course, J only exists at the surface, so I'm going to be going JS, J surface dot E. And where was I JS? I lost it somewhere. What did it start with? Somebody remind me? Two pointing in. Z direction. Yeah, with the same cosine factor.
2 pi t.
Yeah. So now, of course, 2 pi t, there is no z dependence. Okay, so j only exists at that surface. And therefore, if you're going to go j dot e, we know that j dot e is equal to 0 everywhere except for that surface. But at that surface, what do we have? Our E field can be evaluated at that surface as simply cosine, and we set x prime equal to 0. Okay? And we collapse back cosine 2 pi t. So once again, when I multiply j dot e, I'm going to have cosine 2 pi t multiplying cosine 2 pi t, so I'll have a cos squared, just like before. Never mind what's inside, that's what's going to come. So j dot e, I think John, who has the formula for the j, help me out so we do this right. I think j had the amplitude of 2, and it's pointing in z hat direction. My electric field is also pointing in z hat direction. In the dot product, I will have z hat dot z hat, which is 1, okay? Right?
Yeah.
I have 1 from there, but the electric field has a minus z hat, so that there is a negative sign, I shouldn't forget about it. I think I'm going to have 240 pi times cosine squared. Is that correct, ladies and gentlemen? Is that correct? And it's a scalar, it's not a vector. Because it's a... Okay, so I think it's, we got 240 pi times cosine squared as our instantaneous Joule heating. Okay? J dot E for any element is the power absorbed per unit volume or unit area. In this case, power absorbed per unit area. Now, my cosine squared is always non-negative. Therefore, my J dot E is always negative. That means that I am absorbing negative power. That means that I'm not absorbing really power. I am putting out power. At what rate? Evidently, at the rate of, well, it fluctuates. So it makes sense. If I'm going to ask the question at what rate, I'd better just talk about the time average version. So I go J sub S, angular bracket, to refer to the time average power. And what is that? What is that? So the cosine squared is going to go to 1 half. Therefore, it's going to be negative 120 pi. This thing is, on the average, absorbing negative 120 pi watts per meter squared. Because it is negative, we recognize that it is really spewing out 120 watts per meter squared. Now, what is that happening? What is happening at 120 pi per meter squared that is being spewed out? Where does it go? It goes to the right and to the left. Half of it goes to the right and half of it goes to the left. Okay? As what? As the electromagnetic wave that is traveling away from that surface in either direction. Therefore, I should expect half of 120 pi, that is 60 pi, to be the power that is transported by each of the waves in the two directions. And that's exactly what we found through our pointing calculation. So this is, of course, then nothing other than sort of an accounting in which certain measured quantities or calculated quantities are matching one another. And when there is this degree of correspondence, we get excited about it in physics and engineering. We call such quantities conserved quantities. Energy is a conserved quantity. And what makes energy important is that because it is a conserved quantity that we can sort of like keep track as we are making our calculations. Okay, so whenever we discover conserved quantities, we elevate them into very important quantities that we pay attention to and teach. Any questions? So this was an example, prolonged example, in which I think I have addressed many of the questions you might have had in doing the last problem. Okay, yes, you have a question? J sub S dot E, I am making that dot multiplication, okay? My E is given here. This is my E. And my J sub S, which I forgot about it, but my friend John reminded me, we started with plus Z times 2 times cosine 2 pi T, residing on x equals 0 surface, x equals 2 surface, and is measured in units of amperes per meter. Okay? When I dot multiply this with this, okay, I get zero everywhere except for x equals to 2, all right? And there I get 2 times 120 pi, which is 240 pi, and then z hat dot z hat gives me 1, and minus sign remains, and therefore I get the expression that I had here, minus 240 pi cosine squared, the argument. Huh?
Inside the cosine.
It is inside a different one, yes. So inside the cosine, there is only t. There is no x, okay? So we know that. I gave a long answer, but you are not paying attention to it. I'll repeat myself. The result is zero everywhere, except where it is not zero. Okay? Where it is not zero, which is at x equal to 2 surface, okay? It is minus 240 pi times cosine squared 2 pi t. That's it. So from this, you know that this is zero everywhere except for at x equals to 2, and at x equals to 2, it has no more spatial variation it can exhibit, so it only depends on time, and it depends on time as cosine squared of 2 pi t. And the time average value of cosine squared 2 pi t is, you say, no. Listen to my question and answer that. The average value of cosine squared 2 pi t, what is that? Give me a number. Cosine squared of 2 pi t equals, give me the number. 1/2, exactly. And that 1/2 turns 240 into 120. Okay? So I don't know what you really asked from me, but I really reviewed it, and this is the calculation. Any questions? Any further questions about this example? Now, the phasor stuff. Okay? So whenever we calculate energy or power-like quantities, which means you are multiplying two quantities whose relationship is impedance-like, okay? That is giving you units of energy or power. You are always ultimately interested in their time average value if these are cosinusoidal quantities. And the recipe is always the same, okay? So to remind you the recipe, I will go back to all the way to ECE210. In ECE210, we had voltages that were cosinusoidal, and whenever that was the case, we could always write them to be the real part of some phasor B. And I'm gonna put a tilde for phasors, because this is what I'm gonna do to differentiate my vectors from phasors. So let's just do that. Times e to the j omega t. If you saw a voltage like this, you saw that this was a cosinusoidal at frequency omega, and this could be any complex number. It's called a phasor. Okay? So now, if you have a cosinusoidal voltage related to a certain two-terminal element, you're going to have also cosinusoidal in steady-state current, and that is written as like this: I times e to j omega t. Okay, so these are definitions that you knew. The other thing that you knew was that real part of this thing can be written as this thing plus its conjugate divided by 2. So I could write this V tilde times e to the j omega t plus the entire complex conjugate of this thing. Okay? And that is V star e to the minus j omega t. And the same applies, and divided by 2. And the same applies for the current. This time we have I tilde e to the j omega t plus complex conjugate divided by 2. Okay? So also get used to this notation. If you see a complex quantity plus cc, it means you are adding to what you have in the front the complex conjugate of what you have in the front. Okay? So that is used a lot to make things simple. So then if I calculate power, power is the product of this two, vi, v of t, I of t. And then that should be nothing other than the product of this guy with this guy. Okay? Now if I multiply all that, what am I gonna get? I'm gonna get something divided by 4, and in that something I'm gonna have every combo. Okay? I will have this guy times this guy, so Vi, and that's going to have e to the j 2 omega t. And then I'm going to have this guy times this guy, and that's going to be the complex conjugate of this guy, right? Yes. It's going to be the complex conjugate of this guy. And then, but these are time varying, okay? And what else do I have? I have some stuff that is not time varying. Brian, you have a question?
I'm just asking about the dash dash.
There is no dash dash. This is capital I with a tilde.
No, the little carrots.
Where?
In your actual formula on the right.
Here?
Yeah.
This guy?
Yeah.
It's not dash dash. It's CC. You're not listening to me. What did I say? Can somebody tell Brian what I said about CC? John, can you tell him? What did I say about CC?
It's the complex conjugate.
So, Brian, as you go through the rest of your life and doing engineering, once in a while you will see something plus CC. When you see that, then say, hey, this is the complex conjugate what I have in front. For making things clear for you, I'm going to do away with this. I just wanted to introduce this idea so that in the future you know it, but let me write it explicitly for your benefit. Okay? So basically then, the product of this guy with this guy I capture, then there is the product of this guy, I'm not going to write it out, I'm just going to say CC. Okay? That makes sense. Okay? But I know that this is changing with time and this is changing with time. And it is changing with time twice as fast as the original signals are changing in time. So while in one period the original signals are making one cosinusoidal variation, this guy and its CC are varying twice. Okay? If I integrate these quantities over one period and divide by the period, I'm going to get zilch, nothing. Because the one period integration of sine and cosine function goes to zero because area under the curve is equal to zero. So these are not going to contribute. What is going to contribute? Okay, what's going to contribute is this product, which is Vi star. Now, the exponentials eat one another out. They disappear because they are complex conjugates. And then there is one more thing, which is this guy. And again, the exponentials eat one another. And so we have Vi star plus CC. Okay? So now I see that my instantaneous power is a... Now, whenever I have something plus CC, is it real or complex? No. Something plus CC is always... Whenever you have a complex number, you add to it its complex conjugate, you always get twice the real part. You never get a complex value. So complex quantity plus CC is always real. So another good reason to use CC notation. It reminds you that this is what's going to happen. Okay? So I have a real quantity coming from these two terms, which is fluctuating in time. And if I'm after time average, I'm going to ignore them. And then I have another two terms that are coming from here. And that's a real quantity. And it's not changing in time. That's my average power. I have a fluctuating power, but if I go to the time average Q of t, okay, it disregards this portion, and what's remained? What is it that remains? It is something plus its conjugate, that is twice the real part, divided by 4, and when 2 is divided by 4, what do you get? Half. So, this is the proof that I have 1/2 the real part of, the real part because something plus its CC is a real part, Vi conjugate. So I reminded you a derivation that you had seen in ECE 210, perhaps in a slightly different fashion, but this is it, okay? Now, J dot E's, E cross H's are all products, just like Vi, okay? They're just like more complicated products because you are dealing with vectors and you have to take into account their various components. But ultimately, you are multiplying a lot of things. So the time average always follows the same rule, okay? So basically, then to summarize, pointing vector S is E cross H, but oftentimes we are interested in time average S, and for that use this real part of E cross H star with the corresponding phasors. But of course, you only use phasors if your signals are cosinusoidal, okay? Obviously, if you have a triangular waveform, you don't use phasors because the time average is, you don't probably need a time average in it. If you are using a rectangle, you don't need a time average. It's either on or off, okay? So time average becomes a necessity, a desirable thing in cosinusoidal situation, but cosinusoidals can always be represented in terms of their phasors, and because of that, you have a handy phasor formula to remember, okay? And likewise, Joule heating, J dot E, time average. Notice that this side that I'm time averaging is a purely real function. I am taking the time average of a purely real expression. That is equal to 1/2 the real part of always the participating quantities shown in phasor form, and their whatever multiplication is going, they are going through. It can be a dot product or a cross product. Cross product in the example of pointing vector, in the case of Joule heating, it is a dot product. That multiplication is reproduced under the real operator, and you always conjugate one of the participant phasors. It doesn't matter actually which one you conjugate, because since you are taking the real part of a complex multiplication, if you conjugate it, you're going to end up with the same real part. Conjugation inside is only changing the sign of the imaginary part, so it doesn't matter. Any questions here? All right, so that's for practicalities and how you do these calculations. What about the theory? The theory is sort of straightforward and boring, but we might as well look at it. Is it there? Okay. So, Poynting's theorem. So, big participants are here. We start with Maxwell's equations and take Faraday's law here. This is Faraday's law, and we don't multiply it with H. We take Ampere's law, we don't multiply with E. Okay, so this is the calculation that Poynting did back in 19th century sometime. And then we subtract this equation. We subtract these equations one from the other, and on one side we have this combo, okay? And on the other side, we have all these negative quantities. Minus dB dt dot h, minus the e dt, d displacement dt dot e, and minus j dot e, which eventually becomes our Joule heating term, okay? So it looks like a messy equation. We recognize that d is epsilon e and b is mu h. Therefore, we recombine this equation into this form. Now, this is a vector identity. This is, you would have never guessed it unless you did some vector calculus, but this is a vector identity. This whole complicated looking thing is nothing but divergence of E cross H. So Poynting worked all this out. Then he put everything on one side, okay? He called this guy S. I don't think he called it Poynting vector. He must have called it something, I don't know. We call it Poynting vector in his honor, okay? And so everything comes to the other side. So everything is positive equals zero. This is in the form of a conservation equation. This just looks like, in some sense, the continuity equation. In case of continuity equation, we have d dt of rho plus divergence of j equal to zero. And we interpreted that as a balance of current j was charged in transport. So there is a transport term. If the divergence is not equal to zero, that means that there is a what is going in doesn't match what is going out. There has to be an accumulation of charge, and that is accounting for zero dt. That was the interpretation. This equation looks similar. We have the ddt of some quantity plus the divergence of something else, and we have another add-on. This add-on was absent in continuity equation, because in continuity equation we're concerned with the conservation of charge, but charge, net charge, can never be created or destroyed. It can only be moved around. Because of that, that particular equation had only two terms in this, in that case. Now we are dealing with the ddt of what we recognize to be stored energy per unit volume. Alright? So our studies so far has prepared us to interpret what that quantity is. That is the stored energy per unit volume in electric and magnetic fields. So the time variation of the stored energy density is being balanced by two other terms. So now it is for us to interpret those two terms. The divergence one, just like divergence of J, has to do, must some have something to do with the transport of energy, because in the case of continuity equation, divergence of J, that J was the transport of charge. Charge in transport becomes J. So E cross H, that is under the divergence, must be the energy in flux. And we interpret that power per unit area. And then this has to be something that is also of power units, because this is energy units, energy per unit volume. When we take its derivative, it must be power per unit volume. This has to be power per unit volume. Okay? And that should be, in principle, perhaps it is positive, perhaps it is negative. And that should be then associated with power absorption, with absorption corresponding to physically the positive. Every time something positive shows up, we interpret it as absorption. If it is negative, it is delivery. Is that making sense? Suppose that this is zero, but this is positive. Okay? If this is positive, this has to be negative. Otherwise, we would not have the zero. If this is positive, it means that the stored energy is increasing. If that stored energy is not coming from elsewhere because this is zero, it must be being produced there. So that is the interpretation, okay? So J dot E has to be negative, and we just associated negative J dot E with the production of energy that is accounting for the increase of the stored energy, okay? So space is weird in this sense. It can store energy, it can produce energy, it can dissipate energy, and it can also be the arena, the platform in which energy is being transported back and forth. So in that sense, this is a very important equation with very important individual terms, okay? Its importance stems from the fact that it is never violated, okay? And then you sort of like look at these individual terms and see what it means to you in a given application. Pointings here are very important. And finally, this is the justification why E cross H we interpret as power per unit area that is being transported. So when the energy is coming from the sun and heating us, it is coming in the form of electromagnetic waves, and there is a Poynting plot associated. And you can quantize this. You can also talk about it in photons terms, but these are self-consistent pictures, and waves, electromagnetic waves, whatever the frequency, they carry energy, and Poynting flux encaptures that. Okay, so that was the theory. The practice we did at the beginning of the lecture. So E cross H is something that should be now, from now on, you know, something that means something to you. In this somewhat abstract world, by adding more and more links, hopefully you are turning this something abstract into less and less strong. Okay. So Elmo, are you okay with E cross H? Okay, try to comprehend it. Okay, thank you. So the exam is coming up tomorrow. I think you should all be ready. Those of you who attended classes should be ready. And not